From the St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom, this is The Gateway. It's Tuesday, October 7th. I'm Abby Larico. Hot Missouri summers are taking a toll on farmers and the food they harvest.
In this heat, it's really bad. I have to get up at first light because by 10 o'clock, stuff wilts.
A novel way to use shade in agriculture to solve multiple problems at once. That story's coming up after this news on The Gateway. A federal judge will not block the Trump administration from sending National Guard troops to Illinois, at least for now. Capital News Illinois reports the U.S. Department of Justice has until the end of Wednesday to reply to the state's request for a temporary restraining order. Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul filed the lawsuit Monday morning following Trump officials' weekend activation of 300 National Guardsmen to Chicago. Raoul said in a press conference Monday, a president cannot mobilize the National Guard without a governor's backing.
I'm here to say that the president's actions are illegal. The president has failed to establish that any of the legal prerequisites exist for his efforts to mobilize the National Guard's troops here.
The White House claims the deployments are necessary to protect federal immigration agents who have clashed with protesters amid heightened immigration enforcement. State and city officials say the National Guard deployment will only further escalate tensions, increase mistrust of police, and cause economic harm. The controversial Missouri gun law that banned local police officers from enforcing federal gun laws will not go before the U.S. Supreme Court. The high court's refusal to hear the state's arguments effectively kills the law known as the Second Amendment Preservation Act. It had imposed $50,000 fines on officers who knowingly enforced federal laws, including possession of firearms by some domestic violence offenders and weapons registration and tracking. A U.S. District Court judge ruled the law unconstitutional in 2023. The state's GOP lawmakers have been working on another version of the measure. Advocacy groups are calling for the Francis Howell School District in St. Charles County to address what they say has been a long-standing pattern of racism. As St. Louis Public Radio's Lucretia Wembley reports, this comes after a custodian at Francis Howell High School was charged for writing racist graffiti in the school's bathroom last month.
Tyler Carter was charged with a felony and misdemeanor last month after admitting to the crime. Heather Fleming is the executive director of the Missouri Equity Education Partnership. She has a child in the school district and says she fears for their well-being.
Students who look like my child were targeted, and that is very concerning because we pay taxes and we send our children to school each day wanting their safety and to have high-quality education.
Other advocates say anti-bias training is needed to ensure employees are prepared to respond to similar incidents. I'm Lucretia Wembley, St. Louis Public Radio.
The Missouri Department of Revenue has added speech impairment to its list of approved medical notations on driver's licenses. It joins 9 other medical conditions that receive similar notice. Christine Rose is a clinical instructor and a speech-language pathologist at St. Louis University.
Speech Alert is impactful for people who have a developmental speech impairment that might make them misconstrued as being intoxicated or being on drugs during a traffic stop or when they're dealing with the first responders.
To get the alert, drivers have to fill out a form, have it signed by their doctor, and send it to a state licensing office. Phelps Health in Rolla is expanding its emergency room. STLPR's Jonathan All reports the intent is to have more and better space to meet specific patient needs.
The hospital will more than double the size of its emergency department, adding rooms and specialized areas for sexual assault victims and mental health patients. Carrie Haven is Phelps's chief nursing and operations officer. She says the expansion was heavily informed by the COVID-19 pandemic.
We really looked ahead of if we were to have an infectious outbreak of some kind in the future, that we could provide care in a very safe environment. We could isolate those patients appropriately.
The expansion comes as some smaller rural hospitals have closed, and state and federal rules on Medicare and Medicaid funding are putting more at risk. The new ER is expected to open in 2027. In Rolla, I'm Jonathan All, St. Louis Public Radio.
Nearly all of the St. Louis region is experiencing persistent drought conditions. As St. Louis Public Radio's Jeremy Goodwin reports, that could lead to a shorter and less spectacular leaf peeping season.
St. Louis and parts of St. Charles, Franklin, Gasconade, and St. Louis counties are in a severe drought, according to state officials. Severe is the third of five escalating categories that measure drought severity. Horticulturist Daria McKelvey of the Missouri Botanical Garden told St. Louis on the Air the dry conditions will impact fall foliage.
We have not gotten a significant amount of rain, even with the amount we got 2 weeks ago. It's still not enough. So that's going to affect the persistence of the leaves. They drop sooner, and also the coloration may not be as vibrant.
Missouri has been under a drought alert for 2 weeks. That means state agencies are monitoring conditions closely. I'm Jeremy Goodwin, St. Louis Public Radio.
Keep podcasts like The Gateway thriving by becoming a member of St. Louis Public Radio today. Your support ensures that your community stays informed and has access to fact-based local news. Give now at stlpr.org.
The word agrivoltaics is a combination of the terms agriculture and photovoltaic. Do I have your attention yet? It refers to farming and producing energy at the same time. Here's Jana Rose Schleiss to shine a light on how the technology is being deployed across the Midwest and the array of solutions it could provide.
Shortly after 8 a.m. on an August morning, Linda Hetzel is clipping herbs, vegetables, and produce from the vines on her farm north of Kansas City.
Italian parsley, cutting celery, peppers. I'm trying peppers, which you normally think would be only in full sun.
Hetzel's peppers are growing in raised beds and are shaded by 18 solar panels hoisted more than 8 feet off the ground.
There's no blossom on it yet, but the plants look healthy.
This is Hetzel's first growing season experimenting with agrivoltaics. The solar array that powers her home also provides shade as she harvests produce in the Missouri heat.
In this heat, it's really bad. I have to get up at first light because by 10 o'clock, stuff wilts.
The potential for solar energy infrastructure to offer a respite from heat for farmers and the food they harvest has been studied over the last few years. While the jury is still out on whether solar energy can be married to the most typical types of farming in the Midwest, such as large-scale row crop production or raising cattle, small-scale produce farmers like Hetzel are finding success. Other farmers across the Midwest are asking whether agrivoltaics can solve another problem, access to land. Increasingly, small-scale farmers have trouble finding land near their metropolitan customers. It's something Kashua Berry thinks about a lot.
Every time I see land space, I'm like, food.
Berry is the farm director at Minnesota-based nonprofit The Food Group. The organization offers a variety of training programs for people who want to learn to grow organic food sustainably and sell them locally. Over the years, Berry has seen farmers ready to start their businesses only to be stymied by the same challenge, securing a stable place to grow food. Undeveloped land around the Twin Cities can be prohibitively expensive for beginning farmers, and renting leaves them susceptible to changing prices and lease terms. So Berry has taken to brainstorming creative ways to find land for emerging farmers.
My kids make fun of me because they're like, Mommy's probably just thinking about how many tomatoes or how many watermelons can we grow. I'm like, yes, you know me so well.
Berry and the Food Group have partnered with a solar developer to pilot long-term farming leases for the land within a solar array. The project's farmers get to use the space for free, and the solar company gets the land maintained, something Stacy Peterson says sheep are also especially good at.
These solar companies have created hundreds of thousands of acres that need to be managed across the country, and they need land management and vegetation management, and solar grazers are perfect for that.
Peterson is executive director of the American Solar Grazing Association, an organization working to connect solar developers with shepherds. Over the past few years, sheep grazing amid solar arrays have become an agrivoltaic success story. Whether agrivoltaics can suit other types of agriculture without decreasing productivity of the farm or the power plant is still being studied. But small-scale food farmers in Missouri and Minnesota hope the future is made in the shade. I'm Jana Rose Schleiss.
That story comes to us from member station KBIA in Columbia. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis. Music by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur. I'm Abby Larico, and from the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, this has been The Gateway.